Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we just checked. We've reached our sixth anniversary of New World Next Week, as our pilot episode was October 11th, 2009. And now it's October 22nd, 2015, as I come to you here in the States. And we took last week off as I was out of town visiting family back in my home state of West Virginia. And wouldn't you know it, once I arrived in West Virginia, the big news was announced. Obama's coming to town. He's going to talk about drug abuse in West Virginia. Meanwhile, protesters say, legalize marijuana then. So let's break this down via the Bluefield Daily Telegraph. President Barack Obama visited West Virginia October 21st to talk about prescription drug abuse, what the nation can do about the problem, and to lead a conversation for people who might not want to talk about it. Obama was part of an onstage panel at the East End Family Resource Center, which was filled to capacity by state lawmakers, educators, and guests who had been affected by prescription drug abuse either themselves or in their families. Obama said economic development and broad-based growth are part of the solution, noting that part of the Mountain State's drug problem has to do with economics. West Virginia has the lowest rate of workforce participation in the country and a significantly higher unemployment rate, around 7%, compared with the nation's allegedly 5.1. Neighborhoods in West Virginia are particularly afflicted, as the Mountain State leads the nation in drug overdose deaths at a rate of 34 per 100,000 people. That's double the U.S. average. So Obama, of course, was announcing all kinds of initiatives to address those staggering numbers, including a gigantic list of more bureaucracy, more regulation, more big pharma boondoggles, all, of course, built on the back of Obamacare. And, of course, in all these episodes, everything we cite and say is included in the show notes. So you can continue your research by going there and looking through all these fantastic proposals. James, there are, of course, some good moves within that big, massive rundown, but it is pretty much the same old brave new world. But that doesn't stop Barry from claiming we're putting an end to old politics. And he said Democrats and Republicans both are responsible for ramping up the big drug war. So at a cost of $20,000 to put somebody in jail, the press said money would have been more wisely spent on treatment and rehabilitation. He, however, unironically said drug traffickers who come to this country will be dealt with by law enforcement. We're supporting innovative policing, he said, like a program in Charleston, West Virginia, which is the city he went to. It's the capital of West Virginia. A program that checks on students in schools the day after an arrest happens in their home. I like that, the president said. Secretary of Health and Human Services Dr. Sylvia Matthews-Burwell, who is a Hinton, West Virginia native, joined the president on the stage. Her agency is going to invest $100 million in Obamacare funding to expand substance abuse disorder treatment with a focus on medication-assisted treatment for opioid use disorders in community health centers across the U.S. So that's basically using drugs to fight drug addiction, if you follow me. So I was flying back here to Portland at pretty much the exact same moment Obama was flying into Charleston, and I've got a funny photo of me holding up Air Force One that we'll show you, but I also got some pictures of protests there as well. You can see a photo of a veteran with a sign that basically says, pharmaceuticals aren't better than pot, and he's actually wearing a shirt that says, don't thank us, help us, legalize it. And of course, there were also protesters from the coal industry who blame Barry for all the loss of jobs in West Virginia, which I think kind of misses the point. There are a few more articles included in the show notes, like why West Virginia locals blame President Obama for its drug problems. See previous coal statement. That's from the Christian Science Monitor. And James, the BBC has a really long piece that digs into the coal and digs into the drugs and actually has charts and data. Obama promotes anti-heroin strategy in coal country. It's also got a pretty pithy intro paragraph. People in West Virginia don't like Barack Obama, but in a state with the nation's highest rate of lethal overdoses, they're ready to try anything, even the president's lefty approach to fighting drugs. So essentially, once you beat a people down, they'll give up and give in. Meanwhile, we know from past and even present, a headline today says U.S. marijuana use and approval of legalization soar upward. Now, James, while I was there visiting family for a week and being out and about all around the towns, I met a vet who got blown up in Vietnam, and his eyes actually kind of lit up when he found out I was living in Oregon. He asked me, how is it? Meaning, what's it like now that marijuana is legal there? So he told me he used to be addicted to big pharma crap to deal with, of course, his decades-long pain of being blown up in Vietnam. until he started using cannabis instead. Now, James, I know this story probably didn't get huge, massive coverage, but as far as where I'm from, it was a big story, James.
So what is it like now that you have legalized recreational marijuana in Oregon? Is everything gone to hell in a handbasket?
It's chaos. I'm surprised you can't hear the sirens and you know, chaos, you know, gunshots all around me. No, it's fine. And I don't believe we mentioned it on the previous episode. I don't think the news was out yet. But as recreational sales started on October 1st, the revenue, I think, beat Washington and Colorado combined.
That's so interesting. But I don't really know the specifics of it. Are you allowed to grow it yourself, or do you have to get a government-approved, you know, license to grow genetically modified crap?
You are allowed to grow four plants, I believe, in your home, and you're allowed to possess an ounce, which the average person would seem like a hell of a lot of marijuana. But it's really, I mean, the medical has been here in Oregon for a long, long time, and they don't even have that in West Virginia, which I would love to see as, absolutely, I would admit, the gateway path to just full-on legalization in West Virginia.
Well, I guess the verdict's still out on that one, but anyway, it's good to see that this conversation is at least happening in the United States at a growing level, and I guess in Canada now that Trudeau's in.
There you go. There you go. And really, I mean, this is such a big kind of larger story in the way that it affects West Virginia, and you know, and I try and be a good ambassador for my home state, but of course, you know, as I've probably joked before, we're at the top of all the bad lists and at the bottom of all the good lists. And in some ways, I would see, you know, a massive pro-cannabis move in West Virginia to almost be a silver bullet for all kinds of woes, and they would instantly kind of become the most progressive, successful state on the entire East Coast. But having said that, James, if you don't have anything else to comment on that, we'll move to our second big story this week.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Our second story this week comes from Fusion.net. Cops want customers' DNA from Ancestry and 23andMe. And this was submitted to us via Twitter from our good buddy Mike at AphexJS. When companies like Ancestry.com and 23andMe first invited people to send in their DNA for genealogical tracing and medical diagnostic tests, those silly privacy advocates warned about the creation of a giant genetic database that might one day be used against participants by law enforcement. DNA, after all, can be a key to solving crimes. It has serious information about you and your family, genetic privacy advocate Jeremy Gruber said back in 2010 when services were just getting popular. Now, 5 years later from that, when 23andMe and Ancestry both have over a million customers, those warnings are looking pretty prescient. Your relative's DNA could turn you into a suspect, warns Wired magazine, writing about a case from earlier this year in which New Orleans filmmaker Michael Ussery became a suspect in an unsolved murder case that even the Electronic Frontier Foundation ultimately called a wild goose chase that demonstrated the very real threats to privacy and civil liberties posed by law enforcement agencies and their access to private genetic databases. Now, the FBI, of course, maintains a national genetic database with samples from convicts and arrestees, but this was the most public example of cops turning to private genetic databases to find a suspect, the previously mentioned Ussery case. But it's not the only time it's happened, and it means that a lot of people who submitted genetic samples for reasons of health, curiosity, advanced science could now, of course, end up in a genetic lineup of criminal suspects. Both Ancestry.com and 23andMe stipulate in their privacy policies that they will turn over info to law enforcement if they get served with papers. 23andMe instead has received a couple of requests from state and the feds, but that it has successfully resisted them. Ancestry.com would not specifically say how many requests it's gotten from law enforcement. It has this really Orwellian state feeling to it, NYU professor, law professor Aaron Murphy said to the New Orleans Advocate. So as this Fusion.net article wraps up, James, if the idea of investigators poking through your DNA freaks you out, both Ancestry and 23andMe have options to delete your information with the sites and says it takes about 30 days. So, James, we talked about 23andMe 2 years ago in about 2 weeks ago on the show, and once again, what do you know? The prophecy has been fulfilled. The warnings have borne out, James.
Yeah, it's maybe not polite to say we told you so, but we told you so. But then again, I imagine that our audience is probably not the kind that was lining up to use this service anyway, I would hope. But here it is in black and white. And the only thing that surprises me about this is that it came out so relatively early in the life cycle of this this company. I mean, I have zero surprise that this is going on. It's just, I would assume that this would be a conspiracy theory for several more years. Oh, you think the government's going to be looking at these DNA databases? Oh, what a conspiracy. Oh, yes, they certainly are. So, I mean, again, it's not really surprising. But look at the way they frame it. They call the people who are concerned about these things privacy advocates, as if it's some kind of special, like, lobbyist or something, some kind of, like, creepy person or something, rather than just a human being who cares about, you know, the way their genetic data is being handled. Like, presumably every single person using the service. No, 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 you're not just a regular person, you're a privacy advocate. One of those strange people out there. So it's just interesting to see the way they use certain words to try to frame the debate. But again, not particularly surprising that Google-backed 23andMe is complying. The only thing to add is the update that 23andMe has released their transparency report now, showing that they have received 4 requests that pertain to 5 different users' data so far, and they, as you say, they weren't legally obligated by those requests at this point. But if they are, they are happy to comply, and they've already said that.
James, the story we covered back in October of 2013, the headline was 23andMe receives patent to create designer babies, denies plan to do so. And you, James, you were throwing out that old insult, conspiracy theorist, as we discussed here recently. It's corruption allegations, remember. Now, as I'm kind of built this episode, I've found a through line, and in some ways it is a lot of West Virginia-related stories, and something that relates to this, because that article from Fusion mentions the FBI maintaining their national genetic database, and of course that's not a place in a building, but it got me to thinking, isn't there a place? There's a new place they're building, and they did. Newly opened FBI DOD Biometric Center will help combat the threat of terrorism. And James, guess which poor beat-down state they built this baby in?
West Virginia.
Ding, ding, ding. Good job. So hopefully I'm laying out a little bit of a path that you kind of see what's been done there. And you might wonder, gosh, who's been the senator? Who's been running that state for a long time? Oh, that's right. It's John D. Rockefeller IV. So with all of that badness and now our third story, and as if we've done all through 2015, we try and give you good news next week. And we call it hashtag good news next week, soon to get its own weekly series. Our third story this week, DuPont found liable in West Virginia Teflon toxin trial. Let's take this via the Environmental Working Group. A federal jury on October 7th found DuPont liable for causing a West Virginia woman's kidney cancer by poisoning her drinking water with a chemical used to make Teflon. The jurors ordered the company to pay $1.6 million in damages. The jury in Columbus, Ohio, held that DuPont was guilty of negligence and infliction of emotional distress for deliberately discharging the chemical, a perfluorinated compound, or PFC, called PFOA, into the Ohio River, which runs through Ohio as well as West Virginia, the Ohio River, landfills, the air, and that the contamination caused the cancer that afflicted Carla Marie Bartlett, age 59. Bartlett's case was the first to go to trial of 3,500 lawsuits against the company for illnesses caused by the pollution of public water systems and private wells near DuPont's Washington Works plant in Parkersburg, West Virginia. DuPont, quote, made the Ohio River their personal toxic dumping ground so they can make more money on Teflon, end quote, Bartlett's lawyer Mike Papantonio said in closing arguments. Papantonio's the man who helped expose Bayer knowingly selling its AIDS-tainted Factor VIII drug in that legendary Scarborough clip. Despite DuPont's callous disregard for the health of the community and its repeated efforts to hide the truth, however, the jury did not find that the company acted with malice. Bartlett's lawyers introduced as evidence internal DuPont documents that showed the company knew for decades that PFOA was hazardous, including a 1981 memo that reported a high level of birth defects in children of women who worked at the plant. DuPont never reported that or other damning information to the EPA, who, you know, James, as we've reported here time after time, do fantastic work as well, like their recent great work on the Animas River in Colorado. So the next trial is set for December 1st. So following a verdict in that case, the remaining lawsuits will be consolidated into just one trial, or DuPont could offer to settle for a lump sum to be divided among the victims. So, James, I've got some relateds and hopefully some kind of good news relateds, but I want to know your take on this DuPont story.
Well, as is customary with the good news next week, let me put the asterisks on this story. And there's at least three that I can think of. One is that the PFOA, this chemical, is no longer used in the U.S., which is good, but it has been so thoroughly used, not only in the creation of Teflon, but in hundreds of other chemical products, that as this article notes, it is in the blood of virtually all Americans. Secondly, there was... It says here, the chemical is no longer made or used in the U.S., but DuPont continues to make Teflon using an alternative nonstick chemical that was rushed to market without adequate safety testing. So we'll see, I'm sure, the next round of this story in a couple of decades. And finally, we should also note that it's not going to be DuPont that's paying for any of these settlements. It's going to be Chemours, I don't know how to pronounce that, a new spin-off company that inherited DuPont's specialty chemicals business along with its liability for PFOA pollution. So DuPont isn't even on the hook for this.
So they basically made up a BS company to be the loser to take all of this.
Exactly right.
That they knew was going to happen. So James, I also remember just a couple of months ago, because I went to college and lived for 10 years in what's called the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. And there was excited news all this year because Procter & Gamble is going to build a new $500 million West Virginia facility in Martinsburg. And I even actually tweeted back and forth with one of the writers out of West Virginia who was covering the story. And I said, hey, what are they going to make at that facility? They haven't said. No idea. But everybody's so excited to sort of sell out their future and their health at the very least. Ooh, but we're going to get a couple of dozen jobs. So, James, this new site, they actually did just start to break ground on it just in this past week. But I've also got another story here that shows that that site was already found to be contaminated with decades-old pesticides. So it's just kind of bad upon bad upon bad. But let's try and get a couple of hashtag good news next week headlines. Survey says McDonald's franchisees insolvent, depressed, and leaderless, as a lot of people sort of predicting the imminent complete demise of McDonald's. And as they fall, Wendy's does the right thing and refuses the GMO Arctic apple. Now, another note, James, yesterday was Back to the Future Day, the day in the sequel that Marty sort of goes to the future, October 21st, 2015. And as a longtime Back to the Future nerd, it was really cool to see that the Sync Book guys made it into the Washington Post in an article called "A YouTube Video Claims Back to the Future Predicted 9/11. And that isn't even the weird part. Now, this does get into synchromysticism, and I just love the idea of people reading about that on the Washington Post, as esoteric as that may be, James. So there's so much news when we miss a week. I'm still kind of playing catch-up myself, and there's really a lot going down in the new world odor. So I'll just remind everybody to submit stories and keep us all informed using hashtag New World next week. One headline sort of worth mentioning in closing, though, James. New York Times is on the case, buddy. What do we really know about Osama bin Laden's death? And that's now because Joe Biden's kind of changing his story, making himself look good, that he told Barry to kill Osama. And you've seen the other phonies, you know, the phonies that are running for selection 2016, which we have done really, really well to not mention so far here on New World next week. So most of that's just kind of PR moves from the powers that shouldn't be, the very kind we try and take down every week here. James?
Don't worry, though. Peter Bergman had a response, I think, in Time, or is it CNN? Anyway, he had a response to NYT Magazine, basically doing conspiracy theory shaming on them. How dare you raise questions about this raid? So there you go. Just more of the PR back and forth. But really, all I want is I want my money back for Back to the Future 2, because they certainly did not predict the winners of the World Series. So my Cubbies are going to go probably another century before actually winning. Oh, well. Who cares? Sort of. Anyway, that's it. I think we're out. See you next week.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.